disgustingly ideal ones that actually stayed in bikini bottoms. She'd gotten good breasts. It wasn't that they were so big. Frankly, she didn't think they were. It was just that they were really round and really high and really perky, and she had a short neck, which was why she wore her hair short. The girls at the beauty academy said it made her neck look longer. And sometimes even she thought her breasts looked fake in certain tops, but they weren't. They were real. Perhaps a bit too enthusiastically perky, but she figured she should enjoy that while she could, because she fully comprehended complex equations like gravity plus time. The reflection of the glowing red face of the clock on the bedside table suddenly drew her attention, blinking as the hour rolled over. 4 a.m. She stared at it in the mirror, aghast, realizing that in 3 hours and 20 minutes, classes would begin for the day. On Thursdays, she taught 4 100-level anthropology courses. Or she'd used to. She certainly wouldn't be teaching any today. She considered calling in sick, but decided it was wiser not to. When this was over, she'd figure out what kind of story to tell. She might be able to get away with claiming to have been forcibly abducted and fully exonerate herself. Which meant if she called in sick now, it would make her look like a liar later.
"I know it's odd for a kidnapper to let his kidnappee call in sick, but he was an odd kidnapper."
Right. That would go over like a ton of bricks. Exhaling gustily, she returned her attention to her laptop and plugged it into the hotel line. She decided to check her email while he was showering, partly in a no doubt pointless bid for the comfort of routine, but also to keep her mind off sex, which, with him around, was like trying not to think about chocolate while sitting in a person-sized fondue pot of the dark, creamy stuff, surrounded by flowering cacao trees. Her inbox was filled with the usual, newsletters to which she subscribed to stay apprised of significant developments in her field, emails from students in the undergrad classes she'd TA'd, filled with impressively creative excuses as to why they should be the exception to the rule, for given their A. absenteeism, B. failure to appear for an exam, C. late paper. The entertaining and inventive pleas for leniency were followed by spam, spam, and more spam, and finally, the one she liked best, the Naked Man of the Week pictures from her cyber friends at RBL Romantica. She made short work of her correspondence, shooting the newsletters to a suspend folder for later perusal, denying any and all excuses, pleas for extensions that didn't involve a death in the family, reporting the spam, and perusing the Naked Man pictures appreciatively before setting one of them as her desktop background. She was about to log off when a new email popped in. She scanned the sender's ID. Myrden@Druey.com. She didn't know a Myrden@Druey.com and had a phobia about viruses. If something happened to her laptop, a new one wasn't in the budget. There was no topic in the subject line, which meant, according to her stringent guidelines, there was no place for it but the trash folder. As she slid the pointer over it, she got an instant, bone-deep chill. She whisked her fingers over the mouse pad, jerking the pointer away. Slid it back again. An immediate, painful, bitter chill licked up her hand. She shivered, jerked the pointer off. Oh, that was just too weird. She frowned, thinking about the way it had arrived. Had an email ever just popped into her inbox when she'd been sitting idle on the inbox page? Not that she could remember. Sometimes when she was refreshing a page or re-entering the inbox, new ones showed up. But one had never popped in like that when she was just sitting static on the page. Gingerly, she slid the pointer back over the topic line. No subject. Grimacing at the immediate sensation that her hand had been plunged, dripping wet, into a sub-zero freezer, she clicked on it hard and fast and yanked her fingers from the mouse pad. She pressed her palm shakily to her cheek. It was cold as ice. Wide-eyed, she stared at the screen. The email contained 3 short lines. Return the mirror immediately. Contact Myrden@Druey.com for instructions. You have 24 hours. That was all it said. There was nothing else on the screen but for a line of nonsensical symbols and shapes at the very bottom. As she scanned them, a sudden shadow seemed to fall over the hotel room. The bedside clock dimmed, the overhead light in the little entrance foyer hummed, and the ivory walls took on a sickly yellowish hue, and as clearly as if a man were standing in the room with her, she heard a man's deep, cultured baritone say, "Or you will die, Jessica St. James." Whipping around, she scanned the room. There was no one there. Beyond the bathroom door, the shower still ran, and Kian McKelter still splashed. She sat perfectly still, brittle as glass, waiting to see if her disembodied guest had anything further to add. The moments ticked by. Her shoulders drooped and she stared morosely at her reflection. He'd called her Jessica St. James. Freaking everybody knew her name. Lucan removed his hand from the screen. She was gone. But for a moment there, he'd had her. Vibrant and young. By his measure, so very, very young. Beyond that, an enigma. Concealed by shadows he couldn't penetrate. Who was this woman with Kian McKelter? Usually, if he was able to secure a connection, he could deep listen, probe, and get more than the general sense of her he'd gotten, which was why he'd attempted the contact to begin with. He'd wanted to see if there was anything he could learn about her and pass on to Eve so she could expedite matters. People were so concerned about viruses and identity theft, and so oblivious to the true risks of plugging themselves into the World Wide Web, wiring themselves to any and everything that might be out there, hungry, waiting. They worried about cons and killers, sexual molesters enticing their children. They had no notion how thoroughly they could be violated, probed, and coerced by a skilled practitioner of the dark arts across a phone line. Still, he'd not gotten far with this woman. The moment he'd pressed at Ms. St. James, he'd encountered some sort of barrier. Flipping open Roman's file, which contained the dead assassin's thorough evaluation of his targets, including photos, addresses, both real and cyber, vehicle registration, birth certificate, passport, lines of credit, available funds, and other pertinent facts, he studied Ms. St. James's picture again. Her driver's license supplied her vital stats. 24. Height, 5 feet 6 inches. Weight, 135 pounds. Eyes, green. Hair, black. Organ donor, no. She was a lovely woman. He had no doubt Kian McKelter wanted her. The Highlander would be as fascinated by her resistance to probing as was Lucan. He and the Highlander weren't quite as different as the condescending bastard liked to believe. Closing the file, he punched in a series of numbers on his phone and conveyed a change in plans to Eve's associate. The mirror was still the priority, but make every effort to bring Ms. St. James in alive. He'd enjoy cracking her open and studying her. He'd not been intrigued by a woman for a very long time. He would do it while the Keltar watched from his powerless perch high up on his study wall.
"Oh, now that's just not going to work," Jessie said flatly when Kian stalked out of the bathroom.
She hopped off the bed and moved to regard him from a safer vantage, over near the window. Sitting on a bed with that man in the room just didn't seem wise.
"You go back in there and get dressed," she ordered.
Funny thing was, she'd just been placing bets with herself about what condition the archaic Highlander would exit in. Kilt-clad and modest, in a towel and semi-modest, or in-your-face nude and on the predatory prowl. She decided on in-your-face nude. She owed herself $5. He placed his thigh sheath and jeweled blade on the writing desk, wearing two towels, one at his waist and the other wrapped turban-style around his head. It was barely better than nude. In fact, it only made her want to peel those offending towels away. As if reading her mind, he ducked his head and unwound the first towel, sponging the excess water from his dark mane. Righting himself, he tossed his hair back over his shoulders, metallic beads clinking. Tiny rivulets of water ran down over his magnificent tattooed chest. A thin channel of it slithered over that tattooed nipple. Muscles bunched and rippled in his tattooed biceps. She moistened her lips, wondering what on earth was wrong with her. She'd never had such an intense reaction to a man before. She had only to look at him to get all shaky feeling inside. And it wasn't as if she'd never dated a good-looking man before. She had. Kenny DiRisio had been a grade-A Italian stallion extraordinaire. Even Brainy Ginger, who was every bit as focused and driven as she was, had said,
"Jesse Chick, take my advice, drop a few courses this term, and hop on that one. They don't come along like that often."
But she hadn't. Hopped on him, that was. In fact, she'd volunteered to teach another seminar, and they'd broken up over it, and now she knew why. While her brain had appreciated Kenny's incredible looks, her body had just never quite kicked in. It never really had with any of the guys she'd dated. With Kian McKelter, however, despite the fact that her brain wanted nothing to do with him, her body wanted to do everything with him that was possible between a man and a woman. Her body had done more than kicked in. It was stoking up the oven for the baking of little McKelter buns. With a man that called a mirror home. This was not good.
"Did you not send for food, Jessica?"
Jessie blinked again, trying to refocus her thoughts.
"Yes, but it won't be here for a little while yet. Look, I've been thinking, what's your plan anyway?"
"To bed you."
"No, I mean your plan that might actually work."
She bared her teeth in a cool masquerade of a smile.
"Ah, that plan. That would be to cross this room right now and kiss you until you start tearing off your clothing and begging me to f—"
"No, that's not the one I meant either," she said hastily. How in the world had he moved that fast?
One instant he was across the room, the space of two beds separating them. The next, one big hand was cupping her chin, tipping her head back, the other hot and possessive on her waist. The man was lethally fast, which boded well for protection from everyone but him. He stared down at her with smoldering intensity. He lowered his mouth slowly, lazily, never breaking eye contact with her. Up close, he was beyond gorgeous. Those whiskey eyes shimmered with golden depths and were framed by thick dark lashes. His skin was tawny velvet, darkly stubbled. His lips were sensual, pink and firm, and curved in the hint of a smile.
"Tell me not to kiss you, Jessica. Tell me right now, and best you make me believe you mean it."
He warned softly, a breath from her lips.
"Don't kiss me."
She wet her lips.
"Try again,"
he said flatly.
"Don't kiss me."
She swayed toward his body, a magnet to steel.
"Try again," he hissed. "And best wear, woman. 'Tis your last chance."
Jessie took a deep breath.
"Don't."
Another deep breath.
"Kiss me."
He laughed, a cocky, rich purr of a sound. Criminy, she thought dismally, as he lowered his sexy dark head toward hers. Even she'd heard the wrong punctuation there. Chapter 10. Even though she knew it was coming, Jessie wasn't prepared for Kian McKelter's kiss. Nothing could have prepared her for the mind-blowing, sizzling intensity of it. This was no gentle brush of a kiss like the one he'd given her in the lobby. This was the real deal. Intense and demanding, it was every bit as raw and unapologetically carnal as it was seductive. Gripping a fistful of her short, dark curls, the 9th-century Highlander slanted his mouth over hers. He cupped her cheek with one big hand and pressured the corner of her lips with his thumb, nudging them apart. The moment she yielded, he sealed his lips over hers, opening wider, deepening the kiss, taking complete possession of her mouth, obliterating any lingering protest she might have thought to make. It was a dominant kiss, an expert kiss, the kiss of a man who knew he was a man, liked being one, and knew exactly what he was doing. This was no college boy kissing her, no young grad student towing the lukewarm line between desire and political correctness. This was a man who was 100% okay with lust, who suffered no hesitation or inhibitions. It was exactly the kind of kiss, she realized dimly, for which she'd always been waiting. but until now she'd not been able to define exactly what it was she'd been missing, what she'd been holding out for. She was struck by the sudden realization that the problem with her boyfriends was that they'd been just that. Boyfriends, with the emphasis on boy. Kian McKelter was a man, and a formidable force to be reckoned with sexually. She was, quite simply, out of her league with him. She was struck by another sudden realization, then, that she was going to be very, very lucky if she managed to walk out of that hotel room, at whatever point in the future they departed, the same way she'd walked in. A virgin, though she'd never admit it to any of her friends. Nobody was a virgin anymore, and peer pressure could get intense if people thought you were. Personally, she'd never thought it was anyone else's business whether or not she was. Only her own, and whatever man she chose to share it with. Her mom might liberally encourage baby-having, but she'd also encouraged a healthy degree of self-respect.
"Pick carefully, girls," Lily St. James had advised her daughters. "There are a lot of duds out there."
As her mom was currently between husbands number 4 and 5, Jessie figured she should know.
"Christ, lass, you taste sweet," he purred. She shivered with pleasure as he sucked her lower lip into his mouth, nipped it, then closed his mouth hard over hers, plunging deep. He kissed like a man who hadn't had the luxury in, oh, maybe 1,000 years or so, exploiting it for all it was worth, savoring all the subtle, sensual variations. Luring one moment, assaulting the next, and it made her crazy. He kissed like he wanted to devour her, maybe crawl inside her skin. He kissed like he was fucking her mouth, this sinfully gorgeous Highlander with his hot, wet tongue and his hard, tattooed body. He kissed so thoroughly and possessively that she wasn't Jessie anymore. She was a woman, and he was a man, and she existed because he was kissing her, and if he stopped, she might stop being. She had no idea how they ended up on the floor. One moment she was in his arms, being kissed senseless, literally, apparently, and the next, she was flat on her back beneath his still shower-damp, big, powerful body, her nipples so hard they were poking through both her bra and sweater against his bare chest, with the steely bar of his erection jammed against her stomach. And she wasn't entirely certain, but she didn't think she was feeling a towel between them anymore. And holy cow, the man was huge. Dazedly, she wondered what in the world she thought she was doing, even as she buried her fingers in the wet tangle of his hair. More kisses, soft and slow, hot and hard. She was drowning in man, in the taste and scent and feel of him. Her hands slipped of their own accord down the thick column of his neck, over the muscled ridges of his shoulders. She barely noticed when he shifted position so that his legs were straddling hers, until he fit himself snugly in the V of her thighs, and his thick ridge nudged the inseam of her jeans against her clitoris with delicious friction. She jerked at the raw intimacy of it. When he cupped a hand beneath her bottom, tilted her hips, and began a slow, erotic bump and grind that was as old as mankind itself, a distant part of her mind began sounding a clamorous alarm. But with each slow, powerful thrust of his cock, that inner alarm grew fainter and fainter as Jessie slipped irresistibly deeper beneath Kian McKelter's seductive spell. When he rucked her sweater up to her ribs and began tracing a path from her bottom to her breasts, slowly, lingeringly, as if committing the subtle shape of each dip and turn to memory, she whimpered into his mouth, hungry to feel those big hands all over her bare body. Everywhere he was touching her, she felt as if a low-voltage electrical current was pulsing beneath her skin, jolting each nerve ending to delicious, tingling awareness. When he closed a hand over one of her breasts, heat shot straight down to her belly and lower still, and she dug her nails into his shoulders, arching hungrily up to meet his next thrust. He sucked in a shallow hiss of breath, and suddenly he was working at the fly of her jeans. And then the air was cool on her bare skin as he pushed her jeans and panties down. That faint alarm was sounding again, more loudly, but he was kissing her so heatedly, so passionately, and abruptly she was sucking air like a fish out of water, alone on the floor. She blinked,
Heavens, but the man could move fast. She sat up, looking dazedly around.
"Where did you go?"
she said breathlessly.
"Behind you, woman,"
came the tight, furious reply. She glanced over her shoulder. He was inside the mirror, propped in the corner, breathing hard, like he'd been running a race. She was panting herself, she realized. Her lips were swollen. She had the sting of a rug burn beginning on her spine, and her nipples throbbed. Why was he in the mirror? For that matter, how had he gotten in the mirror? She gaped at him, bewildered.
"It reclaims me after a time,"
he said flatly. She continued gaping.
"Without preamble?"
she stammered.
"Just like that?"
"I was not my choice to leave you in such a fashion."
His gaze dropped sharply and fixed there.
"Oh, Jessica, you've a beautiful ass. Nigh worth living 1,000 years to see."
His words drew her awareness to the fact that she was sitting on the floor, between the TV armoire and the bed, facing the entry door, her bare bottom pointed at the mirror, glancing over her shoulder at him, her sweater rucked up, jeans and panties down around her knees. The cold reality of reason returned. Oh, God, what had she almost just done? She gaped at the mirror, stunned. In a matter of mere minutes, she'd been down on the floor, with her jeans and panties around her knees. A few heated kisses, and she'd been about to have sex with a man she barely knew. An arrogant throwback of a man at that. Who lived in a mirror, and in the midst of such dire straits to boot. This wasn't like her at all. Was she freaking nuts? Shocked and appalled at herself, Jessie stumbled to her feet, tugging at her jeans. Her panties got twisted, and her jeans got stuck partway up, just beneath her butt. She yanked, but they didn't yield. Only her butt did. She felt it jiggle. He made a choking sound.
"Ah, oh, sweet Christ, woman, you're killing me."
Cheeks flaming, she shot a scowl over her shoulder at him as she bunny-hopped, bare-bottomed, into the bathroom. A groan followed her.
"Stop looking at my butt!"
she hissed fiercely. She could hear his laughter, even through the closed door. Hours later, Jessie awakened so hungry that her stomach was cramping. Rolling over on the miserably lumpy hotel bed, she glanced at the clock. No wonder she was hungry. She hadn't eaten in over 24 hours. The room service she'd ordered earlier hadn't come, for whatever reason. Either they'd tried to deliver it while she'd been stretched beneath Kian McKelter's rock-hard body, deaf, dumb, and blind to all but his erotic assault on her senses, or they'd lost her order, or it had arrived so late that she'd been sleeping. Since she rarely got a full night's sleep, she tended to drop off the moment her head touched the pillow, and slept like the proverbial dead, sprawled flat on her back, arms outflung. After the near-sex-on-the-floor debacle, Jessie had gone into the bathroom and stayed in there a while, cooling down and trying to think things through. But mostly, cooling down. The man threw off serious sexual heat, because by then she'd simply been too exhausted to make much sense of anything. When she'd finally come out, she'd stiffly informed the mirror to
"Go away and let me sleep, and don't you dare wake me unless my life is in danger. And I do not want to talk about what just happened. Not now. Maybe never."
He'd laughed softly.
"As you wish, Jessica,"
he'd replied. Her stomach sounded a long, growling, painful protest. Fumbling for the light switch on the wall sconce above the bed table, she turned it on, picked up the phone, and pressed the button for room service. As she was placing her order for a double cheeseburger, fries, and a large Coke, the mirror rumbled,
"Quadruple all of that, and if there's not sweet, add something."
Shrugging, she did so, assuming he'd eat it whenever he was able to come out of the mirror again. Until the mirror had reclaimed him, it hadn't occurred to her to wonder why he'd gone back in once she let him out that first night he'd killed the assassin. In her own defense, she'd had a lot of other things on her mind. Now she knew the answer. Apparently, He had no choice. Though he could be released from the mirror by the chanting of a spell, he couldn't stay out long. That was a problem. Exactly how did he plan to protect her from behind a pane of silvered glass? Replacing the phone in the cradle, she scowled at him. God, the man was beautiful. Every time she looked at him, he took her breath away, made her forget all the important things she should be thinking about. She shook her head, striving for level-headedness. It was time for more answers.
How often and for how long can you be released from that glass?
He leaned back against something in the mirror that she couldn't see, folded his arms over his chest, and crossed his booted feet at the ankles. She narrowed her eyes.
Wait a minute, how did you get your clothes back in there?
I've had centuries to test the glass. Who the elements comprising it are beyond my fathoming. I've learned to exploit it after a fashion. 'Twas designed to hold humans, not inanimate objects, and I've learned to summon in inert items that reside in my field of vision.
She blinked, glancing around. Kilt, gone. Boots, gone. Even his thigh sheath and knife were gone. Apparently, he'd drawn those items back in while she'd slept. Oh, she had a million questions about the nature of that artifact. But first things first, her continued survival.
So?
She prodded.
How often?
He shrugged.
Try again now.
Jessie drew a deep breath. She really didn't want him out of the mirror at the moment. She wasn't prepared to deal with him in the flesh, all that rippling, sexy, horny male flesh at that, just yet. Still, she needed to understand the parameters of their situation. She recited the chant to release him. Nothing happened. He inclined his head.
I didn't think so. I cannot answer your question precisely. I can tell you only what has occurred in the past. On occasion, when Lucan wished something of me, he afforded me a temporary freedom. Once, several centuries ago, he released me on 4 consecutive days. Each day I was allotted a different interval by the glass. One day, I had but a few hours. Another, 5 or 6. The 4th day I had the entirety of a day and a night. There is no predicting it.
So you can come out every day for at least a while?
She clarified.
Aye.
Which means you probably can't come out again until tomorrow morning.
Another shrug.
I do not ken. You should continue trying at frequent intervals.
How do you intend to protect me if you can't stay out of that glass?
She said peevishly.
Lass, we need only evade Lucan for a number of days. 20 more, to be exact. Scarce any time at all. I assure you, I will keep you safe and well until then.
20 days? Why only 20?
That didn't sound so bad. She hadn't known there was a time limit to how long her life was going to be screwed up, and it was a relatively short one. Surely she could get her life back on track after only 20 out-of-control days, if things really would be resolved by then. She was grateful that she'd had the foresight not to call in sick. Her odds for survival and a return to normalcy were suddenly looking considerably brighter. One whopper of a good story might take care of things. It might not even have to be half as inventive as some of those her students tried to feed her.
Because the compact that holds me bound to the dark glass requires that a tithe of purest gold be passed through the mirror every century to reaffirm the unseelie indenture. The next tithe is due this Hallow's Eve, on the 31st day of October, at midnight.
Criminy. Tithes, compacts, indentures. Any time she began thinking about resuming a normal life, she was reminded that she was currently up to her eyebrows in a fairy tale world of spells and curses. And the scary part was that it was all beginning to sound somewhat reasonable to her. The longer she interacted with a man who lived inside a mirror, the more inured she became to the strangeness of subsequent oddities. His existence was so inexplicable in and of itself that it seemed pointless to squabble over further inexplicabilities. Though she never would have believed it, magic existed. There was proof of it right in front of her eyes. Arguments over. Case closed. Shaking her head wonderingly, she pushed off the bed. She'd slept fully clothed but for shoes and socks, and went to stand in front of the mirror. She studied the fabulous frame with its odd symbols, stroking the cool gold of it, trailing her hand down over the silvery glass. Inside the mirror, Kian raised his hand, too, and traced the path of her passage, making it appear as though their fingertips met. She felt only cold glass. When the tips of her fingers passed over the black stain at the edge, she snatched them hastily away. It had felt icy, just like that strange email, and it had seemed to almost, well, kind of stick to her skin like a psychic leech as she'd pulled away, as if reluctant to release her. She made a mental note to tell him about the Myrdin guy and his goosebumpy email. But first, more questions.
"'Tis because it is an unseelie hollow, lass,"
he said softly.
"What?"
"The chill. Dark power is cold. Light power is warm. A seelie artifact exudes a gentle heat. Mere rubbings of a page from the unseelie dark book suck the heat from a man's body. 'Tis said handling the dark book itself turns a man into something no longer human, day by day, robbing him of all remnants of inner warmth and light."
Jesse absorbed the information, but refused to get sidetracked from the issue at hand. She needed to regain a measure of control that could only be achieved via a thorough understanding of her immediate situation. And as far as she could see, this dark book, whatever it was, had nothing to do with her problems.
"So, all we have to do is keep you away from this Lucan person until after the tithe is due, and the spell will be broken? We just need to hide for 3 weeks, that's all?"
"Aye."
"Then what? Once the spell is broken and you're free?"
Could he get rid of this man who wanted her dead? Assure her return to a nice normal life? He inhaled deeply, his whiskey gaze gleaming with sudden, chilling brutality. When he spoke, his voice was hard.
"Then you'll never have to worry about Luke and Trevane again. No one will. This I swear."
Jesse stepped back in spite of herself. With those words, he'd transformed from sexy man to savage beast, lips drawn back in a silent snarl, nostrils flared, eyes narrowed and not quite sane. Madness born of 1,000+ years of captivity flickered in those whiskey depths, shadowy and cold as the inky stain on the perimeter of the dark glass. She swallowed.
"You sound pretty sure of your ability to defeat him, considering that he's the one that stuck you in the mirror,"
she felt obligated to point out. A wicked, feral smile curved his lips.
"Ah, Jessica, I'll win this time. Of that you may be certain,"
he said with soft menace. His words chilled her to the bone. There was such implacable surety in his voice, such savagery in his eyes, that she no longer entertained the slightest doubt whatsoever about Kian McKelter's ability to keep her alive. She had a feeling the man had a few tricks up his proverbial sleeves, even stuck inside a mirror, tricks she probably couldn't begin to imagine. Again, she had that sense of something more in him. Oh yes, one way or another, this man would keep her safe.
"And how are you going to keep yourself safe from him?"
she wondered. Good question. 20 more days, and he could be released from the mirror for at least a portion of each day. God help her, she had no idea. Kian McKelter attracted her in a manner that defied logic or reason. Then again, she thought wryly, that shouldn't surprise her too much, because everything about her current situation defied logic or reason. She was chagrined by the sudden sinking suspicion that her intact hymen was probably due less to her impressive moral fiber than to the fact that she'd simply never experienced such intense, brainless chemistry before. If she had, she highly doubted she'd have lasted so long.
"Room service!"
The cheery call was accompanied by a sharp rap-tap-tap at the door. Brightening, Jessie turned away from the mirror.
"Thank goodness," she said. "I'm starving."
Kian eased back, just behind the silver, where he could still see, but couldn't be seen. As Jessica walks toward the door, his gaze fixed on her luscious little ass. He'd had that silken-skinned sweet bottom in his hands only that morning, a cheek of it in each palm. He'd been about to make her his woman, fill her with his cock and pump deep inside her. He'd touched those heavy, round breasts, kissed those full lips, tasted the honeyed sweetness that was Jessica St. James. And soon he would taste the sweetness between her thighs, while he lapped and nibbled and sucked her to shuddering orgasm after orgasm. A soft growl built in his throat. Christ, he loved to watch her move. Her stride was determined and purposeful, yet graceful and sexy. With a body like that, she couldn't help but be sexy. Her short, dark curls only made her seem more womanly, showcasing the delicate, creamy nape of her neck, the fine bones of her shoulder blades, and the sweet, slender bow of her spine.
"I do not want to talk about what just happened,"
she'd snapped.
"Fine with me, woman,"
he'd thought with a silent laugh and a shrug. They didn't need words. Their bodies spoke the same language, used identical vocabulary. Desire. Lust. Need. He looked at her and something hot and possessive flexed inside his chest. It wasn't about wanting to bed her. It was about answering an ancient, undeniable call to mate. It was about raw animal passion. It was about food. Bloody hell, his mouth began to water. He smelled meat.
"You can put it here,"
Jessica was saying, gesturing to the table by the windows. A slender, 30-ish woman with shoulder-length brown hair wheeled a tray into the room, pushing it down the narrow aisle between beds and furniture. Red meat. She'd not ordered fish or fowl, bless the wench. It had been over a century since he'd eaten, and he wanted meat with blood. The last time Lucan had freed him, he'd managed to wolf down a meal of bread, cheese, and ale. To his deprived palate, it had been a feast of divinely varied flavors and textures, but it hadn't been rich, juicy, tender meat. That was a memory that had been tormenting him for more than 427 years. Though inside the glass his existence was suspended and he suffered no bodily needs, no hunger, no thirst, no need to sleep or piss or bathe, that didn't mean he suffered no mental ones. He hungered. Holy hell did he hunger. He'd whiled away entire weeks at a time, conjuring the memories of the tastes and scents of his favorite foods. Closing his eyes, he savored the aromas currently wafting past his mirror as the woman began unloading the cart. He had no idea what tipped him off. He decided later that mayhap the woman's intentions were so intense and finally focused that he'd inadvertently deep-listened, catching them even through the glass. Such had happened on occasion with Lucan, usually when his emotions had been strong because he'd been in a fury over one thing or another. Whatever it was, Kian acted on it instantly, without hesitation. His hand went to his thigh sheath. Snapping his eyes open, he whipped his selvar free, hissed the chant to part the veil of silver, and flung the 8-inch, razor-sharp blade, end over end, through the glass. Chapter 11. Jessie backed away from the room service lady, shaking her head from side to side, mouth open on a scream. One moment she'd been making small talk with the hotel employee. The next, something hot and wet and unexpected had sprayed her, splashing her face and hair, her sweater, even splattering her jeans. She'd squeezed her eyes protectively shut against it. When she'd opened them, it had been to find the woman, standing, eyes wide and glazed, lips moving soundlessly, with Kian McKelter's jewel-encrusted knife protruding from her throat. Belatedly comprehending what had sprayed her, she'd almost thrown up. But when she'd opened her mouth, a scream came out instead.
"Jessica, you must stop screaming,"
came the sharp command from inside the mirror. She knew that, and she was going to any second now. Really. The woman staggered back into the TV armoire, knocked her head against it with a solid thud, collapsed and slid down. Her body jerked convulsively, and she went abruptly still, half-sitting, half-lying, hotel uniform twisted about her hips. as Jessie stared in shock. Blood suddenly bubbled between the woman's lips, and her eyes went eerily empty. Oh, God, she was dead. The woman was dead. Kian pounded on the inside of the mirror with his fists.
Stop screaming, Jessica! Bloody hell, listen to me. If you draw people to us, they'll think you killed her. No one will believe your story of a man in a mirror, and I will not show myself. I'll let you go to prison, Jessica!
Jessie jerked, his harsh words a bracing slap in her face. She stopped screaming so abruptly it turned into a screeching, hiccuping noise, then silence. He was right. If her screams drew neighboring guests to her room, she would be found covered with blood, in possession of a stolen artifact, with a dead woman on her floor. Said woman having been killed by yet another artifact Jessie wouldn't be able to explain having in her possession. She'd be arrested in a heartbeat. And not just for theft, as she'd worried about earlier when leaving campus, but for murder. And she couldn't see a thing he might have to gain by showing himself and taking the blame. In fact, considering that all he wanted to do was to hide for another 20 days so he could have his millennium-old vengeance, he'd probably be happy to end up in the Chicago Police Department's stolen goods evidence lockup. He could hide really well there, under police protection. No, he certainly had no incentive to save her ass. Shit, shit, shit! She clamped her lips shut, unwilling to risk so much as another peep.
Shut the door and bolt it, Jessica.
She scrambled over the bed so fast that she fell off the other side. She'd left the entry door cracked, with the security bolt flipped between door and frame when she'd let the woman in. Leaping up from the floor, she hurried to the door, eased it open only as far as necessary to flip the metal latch back in, ducking well back from the line of vision of anyone who might be beyond it, closed it, and secured the lock. She could hear voices murmuring down the hall, and footfalls approaching. She didn't bother stepping away from the door. Though she'd been screaming for only a few seconds, she had good lungs and knew how loud she'd been. A few moments later, there was a firm knock.
"Is everything all right in there, ma'am?"
came a man's worried voice.
"We're in the room a few doors down and heard you screaming."
Her heart hammering against the wall of her chest, she took two slow, careful breaths.
Yeah, she managed. "I'm fine. I'm sorry I disturbed you."
She forced a shaky, self-deprecating laugh.
There was a spider in the shower, and I have a touch of arachnophobia. I guess I kind of freaked out.
She injected what she hoped was a convincing note of embarrassment into her voice. There was silence, then the sound of soft male laughter.
"My, friends and I would be happy to take care of it for you, ma'am."
Men. They could be so condescending sometimes, even when they thought they were only trying to be helpful. She'd never been afraid of spiders in her life, and if she was, that was still no reason to laugh at her. Dead bodies, they threw her. But she was no sissy about bugs. People couldn't help what they were afraid of. One of her good friends, Cheryl Carroll, was afraid of flowers, and there was nothing funny about it.
"No, no," she said hastily. "It's all right, my husband took care of it." "Say something," she mouthed over her shoulder at Kian.
"All is well now,"
Kian boomed.
"'Twas good of you to inquire."
She scowled at him.
"All is well? Twas?"
she echoed silently, wrinkling her nose. Could he have sounded more archaic? At the sound of another man's voice, a note of cordial reserve entered her would-be savior's tones.
"You might want to call the front desk and let them know. There shouldn't be any bugs in the rooms. My girlfriend hates spiders, too."
"I'll do that, thanks." "Go away," she thought.
As the footfalls faded down the hall, she sagged limply against the door. She made the mistake of rubbing her eyes and compounded it by looking at her hands. Her lips parted. Breath rushed into her lungs, prelude to a scream.
"Do not do it, lass,"
Kian hissed.
"He won't believe you twice."
Pursing her lips, she forced the air back out in small, silent explosions. She puffed short, shallow bursts, as if breathing in a paper bag.
"I am not going to scream. I am not going to scream. Why did you kill her?
She asked a few minutes later, when she trusted herself to speak.
Look in the woman's hand. I cannot make out what it is, or she meant to harm you with it.
Steeling herself, Jessie moved reluctantly back into the room and gazed down at the dead woman. Her left hand was closed around something. Jessie nudged it with her foot. A syringe spilled from her fingers and rolled across the blood-spattered carpet. Jessie shivered.
Jessica, try to summon me out.
Neither of them expected it to work. It didn't.
Remove the comforter from the bed and cover the body with it.
Gingerly, she did so. It didn't help much. Instead of a dead body in the same room with her that she could see, now there was a dead body in the same room with her that she couldn't see, and that creeped her out even more. Everybody knew villains never really died. Just when you thought you were safe, they got up again, eyes terrifying abysses, arms sickly groping for you like in Night of the Living Dead.
You will go bathe now, Jessica.
She didn't move. She wasn't about to go off and get in a shower, only to end up having a psycho moment.
She's dead, lass. I swear. She was human, nothing out of the ordinary. Now go bathe.
He said in a voice that brooked no resistance.
I will protect you. Go.
After searching his burnt Scotch gaze a moment, Jessie went. Near dawn on Friday, October 13th, Jessie stared into the mirror, blew out an exasperated breath, and muttered the spell to release Kian for the gazillionth time. It finally worked. Hours had passed since the long, scalding shower she'd taken, using up two entire bars of those little pink soaps. Kian had kept her occupied with tales of life in the 9th century. He'd told her of his 7 doting sisters, his mother who tried to manage them all, of his eventual attempts to secure them worthy husbands. He'd spoken in great, loving detail of his castle in the mountains, and of the rugged bends and sparkling burns surrounding it. It was obvious he'd adored his home, his family, and his clan. He'd told her of the heather that grew wild along the hillsides and so fragrantly scented a fire. He spoke at length of the savory Scots meals that he'd been missing for centuries. His words had brought the Highlands brilliantly to life in her mind's eye, and the constant purr of his deep, rich burr had soothed. She knew he'd been trying to keep her from going nuts while killing time in a room with a dead body. And it had worked. As the shock of yet another attempt on her life and Kian's swift dispatch of the would-be assassin faded, Jessie faced the cold, hard facts. Fact. The woman had intended to kill her. Fact. One of them had to go. Fact. Jessie was glad it hadn't been her. Problem. In a short time, she'd be slinking out of a room that had blood splattered all over it, leaving a dead body in it, even if they somehow managed to get the body out of the room, and she couldn't see how they could possibly sneak it from the hotel without being seen. There was no way they could get rid of all the blood. Fact, she was now a fugitive. That was the fact that could make her nuts. PhD, life, future, all of it gone to hell. What was she going to do now? She had a sudden, horrible vision of herself at some point in the not-so-distant future, calling her mom from a strange, frightening foreign country where the beetles and roaches were the size of small rats, trying to assure Lily St. James that she really hadn't done whatever the police were saying she'd done. On top of it all, she didn't even have clothes to sneak out of the hotel in. Though she'd been able to get some of the blood out of her jeans, her sweater was a lost cause. Though her panties had been salvageable, her bra was not. She could hardly walk out into downtown Chicago in the blanket she was wearing. One might be able to pull that kind of thing off in New York City, but not in Chi-Town. As brilliant golden light blazed from those mysterious runes on the frame, and the sensation of spatial distortion grated across her already frayed nerve endings, she tugged the blanket more securely around her. She began to push herself up from where she'd been sitting, cross-legged on the bed, as far back against the wall as possible, so she could pretend the lump on the floor wasn't there. Suddenly, He was standing beside her. Before she could so much as squeak a protest, he cupped her shoulders, dragged her against his body, and kissed her hard, fast, and deep, before dropping her back onto the bed. He looked at her a moment, then he plucked her back up and did it again. This time he drew her into his arms, one arm around her waist, the other hand palming the back of her head, and kissed her so deeply and passionately that she could have sworn she was throwing off steam, sizzling like an iron on the high mist steam setting. She clung to him, taking all that he was giving, sinking into his body, absorbing the steel and heat of the man. When he released her this time, she plopped back down on the bed, kissed breathless. She felt infinitely better than she had moments ago, as if some of his formidable strength had seeped into her through their kiss. God knew the man had strength enough to spare. He stared down at her, his whiskey gaze narrowed with desire and something else, something she simply couldn't quite define, an emotion that eluded her. It almost seemed like regret, but that made no sense to her. What could he possibly be regretting? When he lifted his hand and traced the backs of his knuckles up her cheek, slipping his fingers into the short, dark curls at her temple, she dismissed the odd thought from her mind. He threaded his fingers through her hair slowly, as if savoring the silky texture of each curl. It gave her a tiny chill, the lightness of his touch. The man was a walking dichotomy. Those powerful, neck-snapping, knife-throwing hands that did murder without pause were equally capable of tenderness and delicacy.
"Lock the door behind me when I leave, lass. I will be but a short time. Do not open it for anyone but me. Will you obey me?"
She opened her mouth to ask why, and what he was going to do, and just how he thought they were going to get out of the mess they were in. But he pressed the tip of his finger to her lips.
"Time is truly of the essence," he said softly. "I never ken how long I'll have. 'Tis action that will serve us best here, not words. Will you obey me for the now, Jessica?"
She blew out a pent breath and nodded.
"Good lass."
She stuck her tongue out and mimed panting like a dog, grasping for any shred of levity she could find. He gave her a faint, approving smile.
"Keep your laughter, Jessica. 'Tis a saving grace."
Her thoughts exactly. He turned, scooped up the comforter with its bloody burden, and stalked from the room, closing the door behind him.
"Lock it,"
came the soft, low command from the other side. Jesse slid the bolt and flipped the latch. Only then did his footfalls fade down the hall. 40 minutes later, Jesse and Kian stepped in tandem from the elevator. He was holding her hand, and although she'd never considered herself much of a hand-holder, she thoroughly liked the feel of her small hand in Kian's big, strong one, and the snug interlacing of their fingers. She felt dainty, girly, actually more like consummately womanly beside this man. She glanced up at him and inhaled a swift, shallow breath. He was devastatingly attractive. He was wearing faded jeans and a much-washed black Iron Man T-shirt. His kilt was tossed over a shoulder, and his knife sheath was strapped blatantly around his thigh, the lethal blade now cleaned and returned to its protective casing. She'd tried telling him he couldn't wear it that way, that he'd get them arrested. He'd replied that she could save her breath, because Kian McKelter obeyed no laws but his own. She'd not found that particularly surprising. His muscular body rippled beneath the thin cotton fabric. With those crimson and black tattoos licking up his neck and encircling both powerful biceps, those wicked-looking wrist cuffs, his long braids, and his imposing height and brawn, he looked downright dangerous. Considering that the clothing fit him, she wondered how he'd gotten it off of whomever he'd gotten it off of. It must have been one heck of a fight. Then there was the matter of the clothing he'd brought her, smelling of another woman's perfume. She had on hip-hugging Lucky jeans, with the cheeky words, "Lucky You," stamped on the inside of her fly, that were extreme low-ride, as in, she sure wouldn't be sitting down with her backside facing a room full of people any time soon, and a white V-necked sweater so snug that it would have revealed every line of her bra. If only he'd brought her one. Oh well. Beggars couldn't be choosers. All she needed to do was get to her car and she could toss a jacket over it. When he'd returned to the room and thrust the bundle of clothing into her hands, she'd exclaimed,
"Where did you get—"
"Hush," he'd said instantly. "Dress and move. We must accomplish as much as possible, as quickly as possible. When the glass reclaims me, we will have time to talk then."
"Okay."
She'd shrugged. She knew she couldn't extricate herself from her current problems. Maybe he could. He'd already managed to accomplish two things she'd not thought she'd had a snowball's chance in hell of accomplishing. Body disposal and clothing procuring. Though she really would have liked a bra. Enthusiastic was hardly an adjective she would have applied to herself at the moment, but parts of her were acting downright perky with every step. She hoped she wouldn't need to run for any reason. The lobby was nearly deserted at this early hour. As they stepped into the long, gleaming foyer, her attention was drawn by a ripped, steroid-bulked man standing at the front desk with his arm around a sultry blonde who didn't look nearly as distraught as he. Coincidentally, he looked like exactly the kind of guy who might wear an Iron Man t-shirt. The man was shouting furiously at two desk clerks. Good, Jessie thought. She couldn't shake the paranoid feeling that any moment now a police officer was going to appear out of thin air and arrest them. Any distraction was a welcome one. Hopefully the clerks would be so busy dealing with the irate brute that they wouldn't notice her and Kian skulking out. Although with a 6.5-foot-tall mirror tucked beneath his arm, nothing the 6.5-foot Kian McKelter did remotely resembled skulking. Kian's hand tightened on hers.
"Hurry, lass."
She picked up the pace, jouncing jauntily along.
"I'm telling you, the man is one of your guests. I watched him go back up on the elevator. The son of a bitch took our clothes,"
the man shouted. Jessie blinked, eyed the man and his wife, glanced down at herself, glanced up at Kian. He shrugged.
"Not all of them. I left them their undergarments."
When her brows rose, he added,
"They were our size. We needed clothing. I suspected they had more, and look, they do. I ran into them in the elevator. Keep walking, lass. Move."
They were halfway across the lobby when the man abruptly threw his hands up in exasperation and whirled around.
"Oh, no, here it comes," Jessie thought, stiffening. "We're screwed. Now he'll call the cops. We're going to jail."
"There he is,"
the man roared furiously.
"That's the prick who made my wife take off her clothes!"
Jessie noticed the sultry blonde wasn't looking too terribly upset by it, not nearly as upset as her husband seemed to be. She had a sudden vision of the pretty woman stripping down to her panties and bra in front of Kian, and had the weirdest urge to go punch her, as if anything was the blonde woman's fault.
"You will be silent and cease looking at us. The four of you will turn and face the wall. Now,"
Kian said coolly. Jessie rolled her eyes. Obviously, Kian McKelter had been some kind of aristocrat or member of the ruling class in his time. A feudal lord, maybe, perhaps even a relation to one of the ancient Pict kings, or Kenneth MacAlpin himself. He behaved like a tyrannical dictator, expecting the world to obey his slightest whims. Cease looking at us, indeed.
"Oh, please, you don't really think they're going to—"
Jessie scoffed, only to break off in stunned disbelief. Four people had just turned as one to face the wall behind the check-in desk, without uttering so much as another peep. Not a curse, not a protest, not even an ill-concealed, disgruntled sigh. She blinked at the bizarre sight, then gaped up at Kian, then back at the obedient little sheep.
"You will not attempt to follow us when we leave,"
Kian added.
"You will remain silent and unmoving until well after we are gone."
His words reminded her of the way he'd dispatched Mark in the hallway, how he'd ordered the valets about and dominated the desk clerk when they'd checked in. How was he doing it? What was Kian McKelter?
"Come, lass,"
he said. She stood rooted to the ground for a moment, assessing herself suspiciously, trying to decide whether she was feeling, in the least little way, compelled in some strange way to obey him. Nope. She inched away from him just to be sure, tipped up her nose defiantly, made a face at him. Ducky, she felt just like her usual self, chock full of free will. But apparently they weren't, she thought, looking at the people at the desk again.
What did you do to them? She demanded.
"'Twould require a lengthy explanation—"
I know, she interrupted peevishly. And we don't have time, right? Fine, just tell me this. Could you make them erase all record of my having been here from their computers?
He looked perplexed a moment, then slow understanding dawned in his whiskey eyes.
Ah, you mean so you cannot be linked to the bloodstained room? Aye, I can do that. You must direct me, though. There is much about your century that eludes me.
They hastened to the desk, where Jesse told him what to do. He issued a series of terse commands to the clerks, and Jesse watched in abject fascination as they complied without hesitation, pulling up their files for room 2112. They rescinded all credit transactions, deleted all records, and wiped her clean from the hotel's memory banks. Whatever he was doing, and however he was doing it, the man packed a serious punch in the charismatic persuasion department. There was one great big problem solved. Gone were her visions of oversized beetles and roaches and calling her mother from some third-world country. As they were finishing up, Jesse stepped away from Kian and circled around him to stare at the bodybuilder and his wife. They were motionless, silent, staring at the wall. Their eyes had the same glazed, eerily vacant expression as the clerk's. Somehow, she'd overlooked that before, too. Probably because she'd always been too busy looking at the sexy Highlander to really notice much about the people around him.
What did you do to them? How?
Tucking the mirror back beneath his arm, he took her hand.
Not now, lass. We must make haste.
Not now,
she grumbled.
How come whenever I have questions, it's always not now? Will it ever be now?
Chapter 12.
Can you not make greater haste?
Kian glanced at Jessica over the top of the mirror that was once again propped on its side between the auto's bucket seats. He hated not knowing how long he had. It imbued everything with a heightened sense of urgency.
Only if you can somehow order rush hour traffic in Chicago on a rainy Friday morning to go somewhere else,
she said with a roll of her eyes, waving a hand at the wall-to-wall cars packing the streets. Then she frowned at him over the mirror.
You can't, right?
Nay. Lass, you must go as fast as 'tis possible. Seize any opportunity to escape this pandemonium.
Returning to full immersion in his thoughts, he barely heard her sardonic,
Aye, aye, sir.
The second attack had come long before he'd expected it. Truth be told, he'd not expected it at all, not once they'd checked into her immense hotel. It had made him realize that he was at a tremendous disadvantage in her century, one for which he couldn't compensate. For though he'd devoured tomes and papers and incessantly studied the world beyond Lucan's window, preparing, always preparing for any opportunity to take his chance at vengeance, though he knew of such things as computers and cars and airplanes and televisions, he knew also the world's current population, and the 9th-century Highlander in him had believed, as far as they'd traveled from her university into the heart of a city of such proportions, that they'd be as difficult to locate as a dust mote in a haystack the size of all of Scotland. He'd been wrong. Dead wrong. He simply couldn't fathom the bird's-eye view of her world. He might be familiar with the statistics, he might be cognizant of modern inventions, but he couldn't feel the way things were put together. All the book learning in the world wouldn't keep a man alive in battle. A warrior had to know and understand his terrain. And he didn't. He needed to get her somewhere he did. Lucan would not take this woman. He would not let the bastard harm so much as a hair on her lovely head.
I dunna ken how he found us,
he muttered darkly. There was a gusty sigh beside him.
Ah, I do. I'm a dick,
Jesse informed him glumly. He glanced over at her, lips twitching. Modern idioms were confounding, but at least he recognized them for what they were.
Nay, lass, I do not see that. Naught about you resembles any portion of my anatomy, he said playfully, seeking to lighten her mood and prevent her from dwelling on the horrifying scene that had played out so recently in front of her. He'd never been so frustrated in his life as he'd felt, trapped inside the glass, having to push her, goad her by threatening to let her go to jail to get her to stop screaming, when all he'd really wanted to do was pull her into his arms and gentle her with his body, take her cries with his kisses, comfort her, remove the damned offending corpse from her environ. Instead, he'd told her stories from his childhood to try to take her mind away and help her pass the time. Speaking soft and low, he'd woven what Highland magic for her he could. He'd left out the grimmer memories, those of a lad at a tender 10 years of age who'd been responsible for choosing battles and sides and sending men who'd been his father's closest companions, men who'd been as fathers to him, off to die. A lad made laird in the Highlands at birth grew up fast, or lost his clan.